We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hello, it's the commercial fast break. Matt Kolsky and Lucas Alexander. It's a pre-draft podcast today. We're sort of going to hit you twice at the end of the week. Pre-draft today, post-draft on Friday. And, you know, in our pre-draft, we decided the best way to handle it was to just do a mock draft. Neither Lucas nor I have any inside information. So we're really just picking who we like.
We do have outside information, though.
We
Does
have
that
outside
help?
Information. But we're going to go no trades, and we're going to sort of create our own two-man big board based on alternating selections and sort of talk about the picks and why we like who we like. So without any further ado, I've graciously allowed Lucas to draft first in this draft. Who you got?
Before we get into the actual pick, I think it's really interesting how
of course there's a preamble.
It started as kind of a top five, and as we get closer to the draft, it keeps dwindling to a top four. Kuminga continues to fall, and now it seems like the top three have started to kind of separate themselves, Kolsky. So we'll get to one through three.
Think there might be a top two.
I have two favorite prospects in the draft, but I don't think they're going to go 1-2.
Okay, well, why don't you draft number one? I have a feeling you're going to disrupt this whole thing, aren't you?
I'm not. I'm not going to do that for my guy, Evan Mobley.
Good.
We'll see where he ends up going, and that'll be interesting. But it's Cade. Cade's number one. He's been the number one prospect in this draft class for a really long time, at least since the beginning of this college basketball season. He is, we've talked a lot with Nash when he was here about how great this kid is going to be. He has the body type of LeBron and already shooting 40% from three. So he is a true, true point guard in a 6'8 to 20 frame and already has the shot. It looks pretty. He is a creator. He is unselfish. He is a leader. And I was listening to a podcast, Kolsky, before I let you in here. He was on with JJ Redick maybe like a month or two ago. Did you happen to hear that?
I did not.
He said two things that were really interesting to me. Number one, his biggest strength, he said, JJ asked him straight up, what's your biggest strength? And he answered by saying the way that he prioritizes getting his teammates involved. And it's not just on the court finding the teammates in good spots to contribute to a winning product. It's actually caring about them on like an individual level and raising them up as people and human beings and then basketball players on a separate level. So not only are you getting the best player, actual on-court product in this draft, you're getting probably the number one leader. And for the Pistons, we didn't mention that. Pistons, number one overall. He wants to be there. The fact that they're even messing around flirting with guys like Jalen Green. I mean, the kids would say they're fumbling the bag. Don't do that. Just draft Cade Cunningham. He is the best player in this class, and he's a no-brainer. Take him. He's going to be incredible.
I don't have anything to add to that.
I have one other story, because I said there were
Except
two things.
He's the second best leader.
Go on. Or is that
do
a tease?
I have to? I mean, it can be a tease. I'll tell you who the best leader is when we get to him. I'm shocked that you would disagree.
I think I know who you're talking about, but I'll let you get to it in a second. The other thing that I wanted to mention from that podcast, because I was so in on just him being a leader. The other thing is he's been a vegan since he was a sophomore in high school. So he has cared about his body. He's treated himself as a professional all the way since he was, 14, 15 years old. He is ready for the NBA. He is going to have a really long NBA career. With the shooting there, that translates into the later stages of his career. He's a no-brainer and can't miss.
Chris Paul was almost twice that age when he became a vegan. All right, number two, I think a lot of the same stuff applies to Evan Mobley.
Yeah.
I don't know about the leadership qualities. He's a different position. He serves in a different role, but he's pretty much widely considered the best big prospect, at least two-way big prospect, since Anthony Davis. That's enough to sell me. I do think people should be a little bit careful about what they expect from him right away, because he's really skinny and it's just a tough transition to be a big, especially that young and skinny a big.
in the NBA. But in terms of the skill set, the athletic ability, the level of defense he played in college, it's a no-brainer. He is your number two pick. And look, if the Rockets feel like they don't want him for whatever reason, then I think they can get a ton for that pick. So I'm taking him for the Rockets because we're doing no trades, but I would be very surprised if he does not go number two, whether it's the Rockets or somebody else.
Really? So yeah. I think I would be surprised because I think that I think Houston loves Jalen Green. Whether that's a smokescreen or not, I just think he's going to go too. But that's,
then trade
that's
down.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder if Cleveland wants Mobley that much that he'd move up. Anyways, we're not dealing with
that'll
the trades.
That'll be interesting. So in your, when you said you have two favorite prospects, is Mobley not one of them?
No, he is. He's two.
Okay.
But so just a lot of the rumors I'm hearing is that Houston is locked in on Jalen Green. And I don't think that's smart. The thing that Evan Mobley, and we're here to do the draft, so let's actually talk about the prospects instead of moving around and trading picks and all that. I obviously am a diehard Trojan fan alum, and I've watched almost every minute of Evan Mobley on a basketball court this last season. And he is so exceptionally talented skill-wise, and that obviously, like, everyone sees that, the defensively, offensively, the different things that he can do with the basketball in his hands, the ceiling is so high. But the thing that stands out is the instincts for me, where, you know, we see young bigs come into the league and the number one problem is they can't stay on the court because they're always fouling and getting into foul trouble. They just can't stay on the court. Evan Mobley's instincts, defensive instincts, and knowing where to be on the court defensively specifically are maybe the best I've ever seen as a freshman in college. Two more things. Sorry, Kolsky. He is the first player since Anthony Davis to win both Conference Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year in his conference, and Conference Freshman of the Year. So the comp there is Anthony Davis. And I just think, for me, offensively, back to the offensive side of the ball, when he has the ball in his hands, he can do so many different things that I really think, add in the defensive side, he truly can be a Nikola Jokic, who also is a stopper at the defensive end, which is a crazy ceiling.
He's the first guy since Anthony Davis to both have a positive assist to turnover ratio from that big spot and also a good block to foul ratio.
That's right.
Which, again, like you're saying, suggests he has elite qualities on both ends of the floor. That's why we're picking him second. Who you got third?
I think it has to be Jalen Green. The upside on this kid is sky high. The downside is that, you know, he could just be a scorer. He could be an empty calories guy, could just be a flashy and scores for you. But the upside is he's a consistent all-star and has the offensive skills to become an MVP. Someone like a Dame or someone like that who can lead your offense consistently year in, year out. And I think that is what makes him a top three pick. I think he probably goes two, but if you're letting him fall to me at three, I don't care. I'm Cleveland. I don't care if I have guards in the backfield already. Jalen Green is a better prospect, and I'm expecting him to be better than either of those two that I have there in Sexton or Garland. I think Sexton is probably on his way out anyways, so I'd rather have Green than either of those guys, and I'm not letting what I have, and I'm not drafting based on need instead of actual potential.
You said backfield, which I think was a Freudian slip, because the Cleveland backfield is a lot better than the Cleveland backcourt right now, and Jalen Green would help that. I am now going to select the best leader in the draft.
Ooh, okay.
How could it not be Jalen Suggs?
It's hard to argue with being the runner-up in the NCAA tournament.
Runner-up in the NCAA tournament.
Former quarterback?
Which,
is that
way,
what we're
was
doing?
His first loss. Yeah. Former elite quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Traits include toughness, decent athleticism, if not great. Like, I know people are down on his athleticism because he's not Jalen Green, but I watched that guy block a shot at the rim and then take it the other way for a fast break in the NCAA tournament. So, like, I'm not worried about his athleticism. It's more on the level of the comps he's getting, the Brandon Roy's, you know, like that sort of athleticism. But he is so controlled on the basketball court. I don't know how you could pass him up for somebody with possibly a slightly higher ceiling, but a much lower floor. Because all the next prospects, I mean, if I'm just looking at a random big board here, Scotty Barnes, James Bouknight, Jonathan Kuminga, Sengun, Wagner, Giddy. These guys' floors are low. All those guys have bust potential.
Including Jalen Green, as you mentioned.
Yes. I don't think Jalen Suggs has any bust potential. The floor is like Kyle Lowry, right? Like, how could he be worse than Kyle Lowry? which is a high level, like probably never made the All-Star team or maybe like the two-time
like
All-Star
he's made
or something.
An All-Star team.
But high quality player who contributes to winning. That's the floor for Jalen Suggs to me. You know, which is why I was saying to you just before we started, if there's any way for the Warriors to jump up,
which is rumored,
that should be the guy. That's the guy who answers pretty much all their questions. Plays defense in the backcourt, could play with Steph or Clay as a one or a two, size to defend in a way that someone like Davion Mitchell does not have, right? I love Jalen Suggs, and I think he is a classic case of overthinking in terms of why he might be slipping in some people's eyes. So that's my fourth pick for sure. And if I'm Toronto, I'm keeping him.
It's 3 minutes after my pick with Cleveland, and I'm already regretting it because I love Jalen Suggs. For some reason, I got in my head, I just want to be right. And I think that Jalen Green will go top three. I don't think he should. I personally, if I'm trying to build a winning basketball team, I would rather have Jalen Suggs than Jalen Green.
Well, and maybe that's why if you're Cleveland, you're willing to roll those dice on a Jalen Suggs. But if you're Toronto and you fancy yourself, you know, not too far from being a playoff team moving forward, right? I mean, if you're certainly a team like the Warriors and you plan to compete, Suggs is the second guy I would want. Out of the lottery, frankly. Out of all
the
potential
Warriors?
Lottery guys, if I'm the Warriors, obviously if you could get Cade Cunningham, you would. But
with this roster, I get it. You probably wouldn't want Mobley.
I would rather have Suggs than Mobley.
I think you're right. He'd be awesome. Outstanding for the Warriors. He'd be the dream. He's the perfect guy to play next to Steph because he has, you said it, he's a football player. He has shoulders. He's built to play, you know, like a strong safety. He's, 6'5", 210 already? So, like, he is built to go into the rim, take contact, and go hard at the rim. He's shown all sorts of a different skill set. By the way, Kyle Lowry, 6-time All-Star.
Really?
Yes.
Eastern Conference is something else, huh?
But for Toronto, if Kyle Lowry's probably gone, you're probably not bringing him back. So
sure. That
was the comp you gave. I like the Jrue Holiday comp. I think defensively right away he's ready to help you.
And again, those are kind of the floors of Jalen Suggs because Brandon Roy was better than either of those guys, right? Before his knees fell apart.
Yeah, but that's only a couple of years. But yeah, those guys had longer
careers. I think the ceiling is closer to what Brandon Roy looked like he was going to be before his body failed him, right? And the floor is in the Kyle Lowry to Jrue Holiday range. Like that's a guy I can win with tomorrow, and I like that.
And he's 19.
Yeah.
He's 19. Yes. There's so much left from this kid, and he's an ultra-competitor who wants to win, as you said, one of the best leaders in the draft. And if you're trying to replace a great leader in his own right in Kyle Lowry,
exactly.
that's the guy. That's
exactly.
The guy to go get. Okay, on to number five.
Yep.
On to number five. Hello, my name is Mr. Orlando Magic. So maybe about a month ago, this was probably Kuminga, and it was a lock for Kuminga to go five. I'm not going to do it. I'm going Scottie Barnes. The worry, and I know I probably shouldn't do this if I'm trying to sell a pick to my fans, is start with a downside. The worry is that he just isn't ever going to have a jump shot, isn't ever going to be able to score from the outside. The upside is a Draymond Green and a really more athletic and longer and more versatile Draymond Green who can go onto ones and shut them down consistently.
The upside is Draymond on defense and Lamar Odom on offense. That's the upside. And that, to me, is a thrilling possibility.
You love Lamar Odom.
That would be my favorite player of all time.
How was
Lamar Odom
how was his offense coming out of high school?
Similar in that he was a great ball handler. He could get to the rim. He was a better scorer than Barnes. But he wasn't a great outside shooter. Now, the game was very different back then. Outside shooting wasn't nearly the priority in Lamar Odom's year at Rhode Island that it is now. Barnes, to be a star, needs to learn to shoot at least at like a 35% clip from three. To be a highly effective winning player, he barely has to do anything.
Now that I gave you the downside, you're right. Let me give you the upside. This is what I'm telling my fan base. He's 6'8 with a 7'2 wingspan, massive hands, massive. He can palm a ball. It looks like a pool ball in his hands. Strong frame. Crazy defender, maybe the best defender outside of Davion Mitchell in the draft. He can guard 1 through 5 easily.
And like, Davion Mitchell can guard 0 through 1, and that's the problem. So he's much better. As an NBA defender, he projects much better than Davion Mitchell.
That's right. He's unbelievably versatile, both sides of the ball. We mentioned the defensive side. Offensively, he can run point He can play down low. He's done that. He's also super unselfish. He came off the bench in college for a good Florida State team.
Guys, it's Lamar Odom on offense and Draymond Green on defense if it pans out. And again, that would be my favorite player of all time and also truly one of the best players of all time. Like, yeah. Scottie Barnes' ceiling is a top three ceiling in this draft.
That's,
as far as I'm concerned.
I'm glad you made this point because we've been hearing for the last couple years that the 2021 NBA draft was the most stacked draft class we've seen in a really long time. And as we are now 28 hours away from draft time.
Less than that for those listening.
That's right, by the time we get this out. It feels in my head that the draft has gone even like more promising. The prospects in this draft have gone even better. I truly feel that there are five, six, I mean, you could argue seven franchise-changing guys in this draft, and we'll hit on the other two.
I think there has the potential to be
maybe even more.
More than that, yeah. But again, drafts rarely reach their overall potential. Like, not, all of these guys are not going to hit. We're going to talk about all the things that might happen if they do. But, you know, like you said, it's possible that Scottie Barnes ends up as a poor man's Draymond Green because he never learns to shoot, right? So we don't know.
That's
but,
right.
Boy, is the upside tantalizing with Barnes. And that's why at six,
yep,
I got to take Kuminga here. And I think people who
wow.
are sliding him further than this, it just doesn't make sense, especially for Oklahoma City. If I'm Oklahoma City, I'm not worried. First of all, I have a bazillion draft picks. So who knows if they'll even be there. They're the one team that has the power to get almost anywhere they want to get in any draft until they use those assets.
Just take the asset.
But how do you not gamble on the upside of Kuminga with one of those assets if you're Oklahoma City? I mean, it's a no-brainer. This is a guy whose talent, the first after game one of the G League Ignite season.
Mm-hmm. We did a podcast after.
We did a podcast, and not just us, but lots of people were saying, whoa, is Jonathan Kuminga the best player on this team?
Is he the best player in the country?
Right. And he wasn't. But that's the level of skill and potential that he has. And so this is a low floor pick, right? Jonathan Kuminga is the kind of high variance draft prospect who could literally be out of the league in 5 years. He's also the kind of, I mean, so was Giannis when he was drafted, right? Kuminga is also the kind of guy that could be a perennial all-star in 5 years, and we're looking at him like this is going to be one of the two or three best players from that draft. So I just think if you're Oklahoma City, or really anyone at this point, the next bunch of guys on all the big boards, right? Booknight, Giddy, Sengun, Wagner, Moody, Murphy, they all have higher floors. They all have much lower ceilings, just much lower. Like, the best version of James Booknight isn't close to the best version of Jonathan Kuminga. Even if it's harder for Kuminga to get there or less likely, you got to gamble on upside when you're at six.
He is fun, Jonathan Kuminga, and you're right. I watched every minute of that one game, and I thought, oh, man, like, he is definitely better than Jalen Green, and he might rival Cade for number one overall pick. Then the rest of the season happened, and he showed, it seems like he has a one-track brain, sort of, when he has the ball. And I'm glad that you took him before I have to pick as the Warriors, because that was going to be a really hard decision for the Warriors if they need a project.
Warriors are the one team in the lottery where that would be a really hard decision.
Yeah.
I still think they would take him.
I think so, too.
But it would be a hard decision. But just here's the thing, man. What he looked like over the—and I watched a lot of the Ignite. What he looked like more than anything over the course of the season was the youngest guy in the league.
Yeah.
Is it fair to criticize an 18-year-old's basketball IQ? I just don't know. I don't know if that's... I haven't watched enough high-level 18-year-olds in my life to have the sample size to tell you when a guy looks low IQ at 18, it's never coming together. On the other hand, I watched a guy in Kelly Oubre who looked low IQ at the beginning of the season, and by midway through, he was cutting like a pro in the Warriors' offense. So, like, I tend to think an 18-year-old who's relatively young in the game, even for an 18-year-old... has a chance to develop all that stuff. Like, he needs to develop feel for the game. He needs to understand when it's his turn and when to move the ball. Like, the stuff of being part of a basketball team isn't quite there. But he's a good dribbler. He can make good passes when he sort of thinks of them at the right time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just, I'm not sure I've ever quite seen a guy with the level and diversity of actual skill set Because skill set takes practice, right? There's talent and there's skill set. And skill set is all about practice and learning.
That's right.
And so this guy clearly has learned a ton, but it almost looks like he's learned it all in a gym by himself. And he hasn't figured out how to put it all to work.
That's right.
In service of the team. I tend to think that's because he's 18.
Yeah. He has the tools. Yeah. As you said, like the passing
actually,
is there.
Like Jalen Green does not. Like Jalen Green looks more comfortable as part of a team, but he also doesn't have the level of ball handling I would like. He is not the level of passer I'd like for an undersized two guard. Like he doesn't seem to care about defense, whereas Kuminga seems to care about defense. He's just not always like locked into the team concept or something. I don't know. It's tough to say.
What you were hinting G-leaguers. At, and you touched on it, the variety of skills for Kuminga is larger, and potentially he can do a lot more. And in fact, he could probably, his ceiling, as you were mentioning, is sky high. He can do everything.
Right.
And if he is locked in on defense, I mean, he's 6'8 with a 7-foot wingspan.
Right.
If he gets his mind right defensively, he's going to be incredible. That is going to be really fun to watch, and potential's there. So,
right,
I like
the
that
Warriors.
For OKC.
Who you got?
This
is really hard. I mean, we basically took the top six guys off the board.
Yeah.
You know, the Kuminga question is out there because people are worried about the rawness, but like, no one doubts he's a top five or six prospect. So it's sort of, I think we're jumping a level down right before the Warriors pick. On the other hand, whoever they pick now, based on our order, probably helps them more right now than anyone other than Suggs would.
That's the question. What do you want to do with 7, and how does that impact what you do with 14? How much do you prioritize help right now, as in next season, versus a ceiling? And for me, I'm choosing between James Bouknight and Moses Moody. Moody I see as who's going to be better defensively right away and can hit the knockdown open jumper. There are fewer questions about the three-point shot with Moody in my mind than Bouknight. But Bouknight, man, his offensive skill set is so tantalizing. I've watched so much of him over the last couple weeks where he has absolutely skyrocketed up mock drafts after a great pro day and combine. He is an incredible scorer. He has great dribble moves. He is quick enough to get by guys. He is athletic enough and has the hops to play above the rim. There is a true potential that he could be
Bucket.
Yeah, I like that. He could be a Zach LaVine. He could be a Bradley Beal. That is pretty much the ceiling. If he figures out defense, he could be even better. And the one question for me with Bouknight is, can he pass? Does he have the mindset for the Warriors to move the ball, find the open guy, and eventually get yours when it's there? And whether he's running the second unit, playing with stuff, whatever it is, to play in the Warriors system, you have to have your mind right and be able to think through offenses and find the right guy. He didn't do that at UConn, and I'm personally attributing that to the fact that they didn't want or need him to do that when they were at UConn. He was the only guy on that team. I attribute also the shot selection there, the low three-point shooting. I think all of the downsides to Bouknight's game came because he was the only guy there. But
this
for
is
me,
informative.
Yeah.
The second leading scorer on UConn shot worse in all of those categories on lower volume.
They were a trash basketball team.
They were terrible, but specifically like the other guy who might have done the scoring. It turns out low percentage Bouknight shots were a better percentage than high percentage shots for him. So that's the problem. They asked him to do everything, and it resulted in a lower efficiency player than you might want. To me, the difference between Moody and Bouknight is the defensive end more than anything.
Definitely. I think there is a chance, I'm willing to risk, there's a chance Moody falls to 14. There's no chance Bouknight falls to 14.
Okay.
And for that reason, I'm taking James Bouknight.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I said the difference between Bouknight and Moody is defense, that was probably unfair.
Proven defense, at least, and length.
Well, but I do think James Bouknight's current offensive ability is like maybe even higher than Moody's ceiling offensively. I like Moody, but there's a reason he might be available at 14. It's because the thing you know he's going to do is defense. Like, Moody is going to hit some open threes and play defense, and you know that maybe that's like a, I love to make this comparison these days, maybe that's like a Cam Johnson type player who helps you win one day, right? I'm not sure he shows the level of bucket getting potential that Bouknight is already getting those buckets. Like, I don't even know that Moody has the potential to do that. Is that unfair? On the other hand, he's definitely a better defensive player. There he's got longer arms. He's going to be better defensively.
Again, it's hard to judge these guys because they are in certain systems in college where they're asked to do certain things. Moses Moody had other playmakers on his team, and he wasn't asked to ball handle as much and create for others. That said, he could get his own. Like, I love Moses Moody. I really, really like him.
Little, like, poor man's D. Wade sort of game.
Maybe. I see him more as a little, like, he's a little bigger, I think. He's a little longer. I think he can be defensively better than D-Wade. Yeah, a little more 3-and-D guy, a little more spot up. I think there's more variety game.
I thought of Wade because Wade is a slightly shorter but very long wingspan guy, which, you know, Moody's like 6'5", but the wingspan's gigantic.
I think the floor on Moses Moody is like a supercharged Trevor Ariza.
I like that.
So I like Book Knight, and I'm happy with that pick. Now that I have the higher ceiling at 7, when we get to 14, we'll look for a little bit of a safer floor.
All right. So let's see. We're going back to the Orlando Magic.
Yep.
With the 8th pick. They got Scotty Barnes their first selection.
Yep, at 5.
And that actually affects me here because I think Giddey might have been the pick.
Wow.
It hadn't been Barnes at 5. But I don't know that I need another 6'9"-ish guy whose best offensive skill is passing. So I think maybe I'd take Franz Wagner here, who is a little bigger, is a little better shooter as of now, and also can protect the rim a little bit defensively. And, you know, I didn't love Wagner at the beginning of this process, but as I've listened to expert opinions on him and watched a little more tape, if he's really grown to 6'11", which is sort of the rumor circulating right now, that player is tough to pass up.
I agree. If the only downside on this kid is that his brother might be out of the league in 5 years, I think I can live with that. Like, experts love to tell you, draft younger brothers. And that is why they like Evan Mobley. That is why they they'll tell you this is why they love Michael Jordan coming out, because he was beat up by his brother growing up and getting this level. Shout out, I think it's Larry. Larry is his older brother.
Sounds right.
Shout out Larry Jordan. That's the only reason Michael Jordan was the best player ever. So Franz continues to grow. He's got a lot to his game, man. And again, ceiling with a lot of these guys. If he's going to be a 7-foot wing who can put the ball on the ground, create for himself, is an incredible passer. Like, it seems like he's seeing the floor with his eyes closed. He knows where guys are going to be cutting consistently. He's shown that. I love this kid, and he can also is a knockdown shooter. It's a great pick, and honestly, if Orlando walks away from this draft with Scotty Barnes and Franz Wagner, I think that's a really, really nice draft.
I do too. All right, Kings, what you got?
If I'm the Kings, and let's actually have this open conversation. Am I ever going to get a free agent?
No.
So I'm chasing ceiling, right?
Yes.
All right, I'm taking Josh Giddey.
Okay. There was rumor that they had promised him too, right?
Soft promise, whatever that means.
Soft promise, yeah. I think that means nothing. But also, I think you explained it. I don't know that we need any more than this. I don't know how much people know about Josh Giddey. I assume the listeners know very little because we know very little.
Hey,
I don't know
speak
how much
for yourself.
Teams know.
I watched him with the Adelaide 36ers mm-hmm. last year.
How'd that go?
Well, he was awful to begin the season. Mm-hmm. Like, legitimately, they were all season long, they were the worst team in the league. He did not look good. Eventually, he, I think, had 3 triple-doubles in 4 games. So he has flashed the upside, and that is why this pick makes sense. He's 6'8", can be a playmaker. He, unfortunately, or fortunately, he played in the same league, as LaMelo last year. So the comps are there. He has similar size. Unfortunately, he's nowhere near the athlete that LaMelo was. And it's a tantalizing ceiling, and if I'm the Kings, I'm trying to take someone with upside. It's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, what concerns me about Giddey is he's neither a great athlete nor a great shooter. And if you're not one of those things, it can be really hard to succeed in the NBA. On the other hand, like, I guess Luka encourages people that if you can really see the floor, you can be effective. And even if you're not super fast, if you really have a high IQ, you'll be able to figure it out. So, yep. Again, high ceiling, very real bust potential.
Definitely. Sounds like a king.
Remind me who I am at number 10.
You are the New Orleans. Wait, no, you're the Grizzlies now.
I am now the Memphis Grizzlies. And I have some really interesting choices here.
Yes, you do.
I'm not going to pretend, because we're just picking who we like here, essentially. I'm not going to pretend I know enough about Şengün to pick him there. But after you just sent Valanciunas out of town,
mm-hmm.
and you brought in an admittedly better defender, but much worse offensive player in Steven Adams, an offensive dynamo big who plays somewhat similarly to Jonas Valanciunas. Doesn't sound like the worst idea. That said, I think I'm going for offensive potential in a backcourt to match with Ja. And honestly, I think Cameron Thomas is just about as good as James Bouknight.
Wow.
Like, I see a lot of the same stuff. Bad team in college. And again, this is me watching highlights after the fact, to be totally honest. But I see a guy who gets buckets in a variety of different ways. The shot's a little funky, but it seems to work. And tries hard. Athletic, 6'5"-ish, I think. I don't have the stats in front of me. But I think that's a guy who, if he hits, is a starting two guard next to Ja Morant. And my backcourt can score like the bejesus.
I'm glad you took Cameron Thomas off the board, because I'm going to be completely honest. I think I know less about him than maybe anybody in this draft class. He was on a pretty uninteresting LSU basketball team. He was a scorer, and he seems like, in my mind, how I've approached this is a less flashy James Bouknight.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of the same, I expect him to be potentially a better pro than collegiate player stuff. Applies.
Yeah.
Because the team is so bad, and he managed to be sort of shockingly effective, a little thicker than Bouknight and not quite the same explosive athlete. But again, like,
score first point guard at the college level and similar dynamics, a little bit thicker.
A little bit thicker, probably a little bit better of a defender today, right?
Yeah.
But similar potential on both ends, I think, and that's why he's the pick for me here.
So I'm up. I am picking, what is my number, 11?
You're 11, yes.
And I am the Charlotte Hornets.
Yep.
And you're going to let the next Nikola Vucevic fall in my lap?
I am.
I'm taking Alperen Sengun.
Okay.
From what Fran Fraschilla told us yesterday, and from what I've seen, he was the MVP at 18. He was the MVP in the Turkish League, which is a top three league in the world, playing against grown-ass men, against former NBA players. Oh, you're shaking
your
head.
Top five league in the world, sure.
Okay. Yes. Top five. Nonetheless, this kid was a young player to be the MVP of this league.
I'm happy with it.
And Kolsky, what I've seen out of him, again, the footwork on this kid, like, he is a throwback vintage big who has a mid-range, hasn't flashed the consistent outside shot, but I think it can get there. But just the footwork inside, the two things that stood out for me when watching. Number one, the footwork inside, the way that he can pump fake, like he plays like he has been in the NBA for 10 years. The way he can pivot around, pump fake, get defenders off rhythm and off balance and finish around them is really, really impressive for someone this young. And the other thing that stood out is the feel for the floor, making around the back passes to cutting guys around defenders, doing all sorts of really fun things that you hope in the modern big can give you. And if you put him with LaMelo and the young talent around there with the Bridges and Devontae Graham, whoever sticks around there for the future, Terry Rozier, whatever it is, they obviously need a center. Cody Zeller isn't the future there. They need a center, and you let the next Nikola Vucevic fall in my lap, I'm taking him.
All right, at 12 with the Spurs, this gets really interesting. They would have loved Sengun, I think. I think they'll think really hard about Davion Mitchell here. But since I'm making the pick, I'm going to take Moses Moody.
I think this is about the point where teams start calling for Moses Moody.
Yeah.
Because the Warriors would love him. All these teams behind him would love him.
And he's a Spursy guy. You know, he's smart. He plays defense. He's long. He can shoot. That's a good player. They like good players. You know, that's why they'll look at Davion Mitchell. But I am too worried about the size. Because I just think about, okay, what is a great defender who's that small? And it's Patrick Beverley. Like, if you're telling me he's Pat Bev with a three-point shot, which I'm not totally sold on since he shoots free throws at 60%. I'm going with the guy who's already a good shooter and 3-4 years younger in Moses Moody.
Yeah, I've already talked about how much I love this kid, and I do think he's a supercharged Trevor Ariza because he has a lot more to his game than just a pure 3-and-D guy. And Trevor
handle than Ariza.
And Ariza did when he was younger. He could do more things, but he has proven a knack for getting to the line. He can get guys off balance and make his free throws. He is a knockdown shooter. Defensively, he's going to be a stalwart. I just think there's a lot to this kid that at, where are you picking, 12? At 12, yep. That is a hell of a bargain.
All right. Who you got at 13? You're the Pacers, by the way.
Thank you. I'm not going to let Davion go any farther. Yeah, because I think the Warriors would love him. And you know what? We'll see how this thing winds up tomorrow, but this might be a tradable pick. They want to win now, and Davion's going to help them win now. They have a lot of guards on this team. I should speak in first person. We have a lot of guards on this team. Malcolm Brogdon, Aaron Holiday, TJ McConnell. I don't know if TJ McConnell's coming back, but again, not drafting off need. This Davion Mitchell's ready to go right now. Might be small, but we've seen guys, and in our system, we have seen guys be tenacious defenders, like a TJ McConnell, who he might have led the league in steals last year at 6 foot nothing. Davion Mitchell is going to be ready to go defensively. He can run an offense. He's smart. The improved shooting might be just, you know, a flash in the pan. We'll see how real it is. As you mentioned, the free throw struggles scare you a little bit. And the other thing about us, the Pacers, number one, we want to win now. Number two, I don't know who's going to be here because there are all sorts of trades that could happen. Malcolm Brogdon has talked about how he's not happy with what's going on. The players weren't happy, and that could have been just because of the coach. Our coach, once again. But now we have Rick Carlisle in here. They're going to be trying to win. And I think they can win. And Davion Mitchell will help this team win as soon as next year.
Okay. This is really interesting.
Yeah, you're Bob Myers and Steve Kerr.
Obviously.
Hey, Steve.
The two of us were hoping Davion Mitchell fell. Because even though it seemed a little silly to pick him at 7, we thought he could help right away. On the other hand, we drafted a guard in James Bouknight.
That's right.
Which means we also drafted a guy that we think will be a pretty good shooter. We did nothing, however, to improve our defense. Trey Murphy, sure, he could improve the defense. Chris Duarte, sure, he's a NBA-ready three-point shooter who's a good defender. But if my priority here is defense, and I also realize this is hopefully my last lottery pick for the next 5 to 10 years, I'm going to look right in my backyard and take Zaire Williams.
Wow.
He's 6'10" and he plays defense, over 6'8" anyway, and he plays defense at an NBA level. He's not a great three-point shooter, at least at Stanford. He's not a great shooter at all. He is a really good free-throw shooter, which suggests like that can come, especially if he's getting good looks, which the whole Stanford season wasn't great. But he's a big, tall 19-year-old who already has an NBA handle, already plays NBA defense, and if he can get his shot going, has a chance to be a star in this league.
Yeah.
Now, I've also just rolled the dice on a player who might not be any good at all. So there is risk involved. I don't know that the Warriors actually want to take on that risk, but if Mitchell is gone, Duarte is just not exciting.
He's older than Lonzo, who's been in the league for 4 years.
He's good. Chris Duarte is a good player. He's not exciting, and he just does not give me any potential of being a centerpiece of my franchise down the road. And if at 14 in the draft, I have the opportunity to get a guy with that potential who also brings some of the skills I need that are ready, that's my guy.
He had a weird college season, as did lot of people. A lot of people had a really weird college year this year, the last 2 years. It's so hard to know what to take away from these last two college seasons. Zaire was, what, a top 10 high school recruit? Maybe top five. He played with Bronny at Sierra Canyon.
Yep.
And the thing that impressed me most is, the defense is there, but he has a willingness to and has proven the ability to take and make the big shot at the end of games. He hit the game winner with a lot of really good players around him. He was the one who hit the game winner for the high school state championship last season. So he can make plays. The ball handling's there. The shot looks nice. If he can figure it out, this is a really nice draft for the Warriors because you have a sky-high ceiling with Bouknight and Williams. And also, there's a little bit of a floor here because Williams can at least help you defensively right away, and Bouknight can be another spark plug to plug in the second unit with Jordan Poole as soon as next season. So I do think there is a floor and the ceiling for both these guys.
And the other thing is Zaire Williams is one of the youngest guys here.
Yeah.
You know, I think that has to be something you think about.
Do I have to pick now?
I don't know. I think we could call it, to be totally honest
good.
With you.
I honestly don't want to pick for the Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, here's what I think we can do. Forget the Wizards.
Yeah.
But who do you like that's left? Who's your favorite player on the board right now?
You know what? We didn't talk about Corey Kispert yet.
Nope.
So he fell. He actually
not really.
Yeah, maybe not. But he fell out of the top 14, which is...
This is about where people have him, right?
Did you consider Kispert over Williams at 14?
No, because I think I would go Duarte. If I'm going to go NBA ready, I'm going to take the guy who I trust his defense to be NBA ready. Because, look, in college, Kispert had a more diverse offensive game than Duarte. He was asked to do more. I'm not sure how much that other stuff plays in the NBA. Like, I just don't know that he's going to get to the rim in the NBA the way he did in college. I do know Chris Duarte can play NBA defense and hit the three. So if the only part of Kispert's offensive game that translates at a high level is the three, I think Duarte is a better player, right?
Yeah.
And if I'm drafting NBA ready, I'm going to draft the guy with the most NBA ready skills, which to me is Duarte.
Yeah, I respect that. Kispert just comes in as a knockdown shooter, and whether you want to draft Doug McDermott as your 14th overall pick, that's the question that you're going to have to answer.
I mean, yeah. Duarte feels more like an Ariza type to me, and Kispert feels more like a potential McDermott. Now, look, he might end up being better than McDermott, but the college games are very similar.
Yeah, they are. There are a couple names out there. I know you mentioned Trey Murphy. I don't really love Trey Murphy. I don't know what to think of him.
I do like Trey Murphy. I just think Zaire Williams has a higher upside.
I know. You just asked who else is left that yep. intrigues me. And the thing with him is he has grown like crazy. He's just kind of getting used to his body. Yep. So
it looks a little weird.
It does look weird, but, you know, that's happened with guys. And they have figured it out, and they get comfortable in their skin, and then all of a sudden they become exceptional NBA players. So there is something there. I just don't love him yet. Isaiah Jackson out of Kentucky is really interesting. Dude has a 9'5 standing reach. He is super long, and defensively the promise is there. Offensive, that is where the question marks. Like, now after 14, there are all sorts, they're just going to be question marks.
Everyone has big problems. Yeah.
Big problems. Is there one guy that stands out? What do you think about Sharif Cooper? Do you care about him?
I haven't watched enough of him to have a strong opinion.
Me neither, to be honest.
But, you know, there are people who think of all the sort of ball-handling guards, he could be the best. So I don't want to discount him. The one guy I think
who we haven't mentioned
that doesn't have a lot of weaknesses in his game, but I guess had a weakness in his heart that confused the issue is
physical
Jared
heart,
Butler.
Not the
yes,
meta
had a
heart.
Medical heart issue yeah. that took a little while to get cleared, but he has been cleared, and this is the same process he went through in college. It took a little while, but they cleared him, and then he was elite. Arguably the better prospect than his teammate, Davion Mitchell, if you're not worried about the medical.
And way younger. He's only 20.
Yes, and several years younger. So if a team really trusts the medicals on Jared Butler, there's no reason he might not go in the lottery.
He strikes me as a Kyle Lowry type. Now, just watching him play, the physical nature of how he plays.
He's bigger and stronger
than
Mitchell.
He's wide. And
he's
has,
also a more consistent shooter than Mitchell. Like, he's always been a good three-point shooter. Mitchell just did that this one year.
I'm glad we got to talk this through. I'll take my pick now for the Wizards. I'm taking Jared Butler.
Okay.
Thank you for buffering. We got through 15 picks, Kolsky.
Well done. Well done. I honestly feel really good about it.
Do you want to go through it? Do you have our 15 in front of you? I do.
So we had, in this order, Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs, Scotty Barnes, mm-hmm. Jonathan Kuminga, James Bouknight, Franz Wagner, Josh Giddey, Cameron Thomas, Alperen Şengün.
Yep, love that guy.
Moses Moody, Davion Mitchell, Zaire Williams, and Jared Butler.
You know the interesting thing, and we'll see how this thing plays out tomorrow, but 12 and 13, the two picks right before the Warriors were two guys that the Warriors were thought to have been deciding between at 7, Davion and Moses Moody. And I really think both those guys probably go somewhere between 7 and 14. And how many of them do the Warriors get? Any? All?
Well, but the other question is, if Bouknight is the pick at 7, does that decrease the amount to which you want those two guys? Because to me, if you draft Bouknight and then also draft either Mitchell or Moody, you've essentially used two picks to get one player. You used one to get the offense and the other to get the defense. And that, to me, is not a good way to use two lottery picks. Like, I want two players who can consistently play together in the long term. If I'm the Warriors and I use these two picks, that's what I want. Is 5 years from now, My 7 pick and my 14 pick are on the floor together.
Well, then maybe that's the argument for the Warriors to go bigger early at 7 because
well,
a lot
Kuminga's
of these drives...
there, that's why I think ultimately they will take him.
Or Wagner. If you want to reach for Wagner at 7, you get a 6'11 guy who can do everything on the floor, and then towards the later end in 14,
again,
one of these guys is going to probably fall to you. Probably not Booknight, but maybe Moody or Davion or Jared Butler.
But if what you... Yeah, if you trust Butler's medicals, maybe that's the angle because one of those guys will. Butler, Moody, or Mitchell, one of the three will be there at 14. I think it's very likely that both Booknight and Cameron Thomas are gone. So, yeah, Wagner would not be... I mean, look, I took him 8th, so I wouldn't be shocked if the Warriors did take him 7th.
Yeah, I'm sure. I actually think there are going to be trades before now and Thursday, so this will probably be outdated by the time it comes out. Nonetheless, we're going to drop this as soon as we can. Kolsky, this was fun.
All right, well, let's stop, and why don't you go put it out into the world. Goodbye, everybody.
We'll be live from Chase tomorrow. Bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.